The Little Sisters of the Poor are in the news again. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is an attorney from First Liberty Institute. Stephanie Tall will be talking with her in just a moment. But I want to set the table here. Right now, a group of innocent nuns is in the left's crosshairs. Again, why? Because the Little Sisters of the Poor do not believe in contraceptives and cannot, in good faith and conscience, abide by the HHS mandates left over from the Obama administration to force them to provide coverage for something they don't agree with. The case went all the way up to the Supreme Court in 2016. And the High Court said that the nuns did not have to comply. A further executive order was issued by President Trump to protect the Little Sisters and similar groups from the contraceptive mandate. But the left has continued to find loopholes and friendly judges in their crusade against religious freedom. And by the way, I'm reading from a column I had written in November of 2019. I continue to say this, a recent adverse ruling from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals now means that the nuns must once again appeal their case all the way to the Supreme Court. First Liberty Institute, a Texas-based group fighting for religious freedom, just submitted a friend of the court brief on behalf of the nuns. First Liberty noted that the Third Court of Appeals ruling, quote-unquote, manifests an aggressive effort to compel the religious objector to assimilate with popular secular beliefs, end quote. Now, when I wrote those words in November, it was not a given that the U.S. Supreme Court would hear the Little Sisters' appeal, but they have decided to do so, and First Liberty is among the first to reach out and say to the public, we are very glad that the Supreme Court has decided to do this. So joining us now is Stephanie Taub, one of the attorneys with First Liberty. In fact, she's senior counsel. Thank you for joining us, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. I'm sorry for the lengthy introduction, but I just kind of wanted to set things up so people understand. So it all, in effect, begins in the Obama administration, where they had these HHS mandates. Can you explain what those were and why would some, such as the Little Sisters, find it offensive?
That's exactly right. So the Department of Health and Human Services under the Obama administration imposed the original contraceptive mandate, which required insurance plans to cover contraceptives, including so-called emergency contraceptives like Plan B. And the initial religious exemptions were very, very narrow and only were brought into after pushback by groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor. And then finally, but things changed when President Trump took office. As you mentioned in your introduction, HHS finally granted a full exemption to people with moral or religious objections to facilitating the provision of contraceptives in their insurance plans. And that should have ended the matter. But that's when certain states, led by states like California and Pennsylvania, sued to try to enjoin President Trump's new rule.
And why did they do that? I mean, I can understand, you know, if it was the ACLU or some liberal group or something, but what was the motivation?
It seems like the main motivation is they preferred the Obama administration's policy to the Trump administration's policy. And I think it's as simple as that. They tried to argue that the federal government did not even have the discretion to grant any sort of religious or moral exemption to the contraceptive mandate. So previously, the groups were arguing about whether statutes like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act required the federal government to respect religious liberty rights. And now these states are arguing that they don't even have the discretion, they didn't even have the option to protect religious liberty rights in this context.
Okay, now, why would nuns want contraceptives in the first place?
That's the point. So groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor are Catholic, and they are very opposed to contraception. And then First Liberty Institute has also represented evangelical groups who oppose certain contraceptives like Plan B or the morning after pill, which are also required by the original Obamacare mandate. And so the point is We believe at First Liberty Institute that religious freedom means religious freedom for all, and it means that no one should be forced to, or that groups like the Little Sisters should not be forced to provide a service that goes against their deeply held religious beliefs.
And these Plan B and morning after pills that you refer to, these are also sometimes called abortifacients. Can you explain what those are?
And that's exactly right. So it's argued that these pills can act as abortifacient drugs by preventing or by harming the a fertilized egg, and which can act as a chemically induced abortion. So that's so because of the life issues here, it's just another reason why these cases are so important. You don't want to compel any sort of organization to do something that they see as harming human life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so comment, if you would, about the tradition in America as far as protecting the rights of conscience. Did the Founding Fathers have anything to say about this? And I'm asking leading questions here.
Yeah, of course. America has a really rich history of protecting the right of conscience. So a lot of times the First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom, free exercise, was referred to synonymously as the right of conscience because they thought it was so important for people to not be forced by the government to violate their conscience. A lot of people fled persecution abroad in Europe when they came here, and we wanted to make sure that this is a place while certainly there was still religious dissension that occurred in the state, they wanted to make sure that the federal government was not was respecting religious freedom for all.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too. I mean, just when I think about this, the fact that Pennsylvania, named after William Penn, actually technically named after his father, but anyway, William Penn created this big colony, which is today the state of Pennsylvania, and he called it a holy experiment. And part of the whole idea was that everybody would be free in their conscience to practice the way they wanted to. After the Revolutionary War, where we won our independence on the battlefield, George Washington wrote a very interesting letter to some of the Quaker leaders of Pennsylvania. Of course, William Penn himself was a Quaker. But anyway, Washington said, you know, we could have used your help there on the battlefield, but I understand that, you know, your religious convictions as Quakers are such that you wouldn't pick up firearms. And so, you know, that we didn't, you know, force you to violate your beliefs. But I think this is important because in America, nobody should be forcing this. I don't see how the left doesn't get it. They're trying to, you know, especially this new kind of what you could call sexual orthodoxy. The sexual revolution is at the heart of so many of these cultural war conflicts and the loss of religious freedom in our time.
Yeah, it's about time that the Supreme Court resolves this question once and for all and actually protected the religious liberty rights of nonprofits like the Little Sisters of the Poor. Because they have been fighting this case, these series of cases for, I believe it's 7 or 8 years at this point.
Yes.
Just for the simple right not to be forced to facilitate insurance coverage for something that goes against their beliefs.
Did you have a hand at all, you personally, in writing the friend of the brief, friend of the court brief, or whatever, I forget what you call it, but anyway, the brief?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I helped write the friend of the court brief. It's also sometimes called an amicus brief. Lawyers like to throw in fancy Latin sometimes.
Sure. And go ahead and walk us through some of the main arguments in that.
Yeah, so we're basically arguing that about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is a very important law that really makes sure that the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom has bite to it, has teeth, and that the federal government isn't free to ignore its duties to protect religious exercise for all. So we're arguing that under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, it's actually required for the federal government to respect religious organizations' rights to their rights to object to this sort of forced coercion. Because the Little Sisters, they faced at one point fines that were basically could cripple a little ministry that's meant that is designed as a charitable endeavor to help the poor.
Yeah, and people should know this. Since the 1830s, this organization, this group of Catholic nuns, they've been helping indigent people in their old age who don't have, you know, any kind of family help or something like that as they're dying. So you want these kinds of people who are willing to step up to the plate and help people. I don't understand the left and their commitment to sexual anarchy and, you know, what I call sexual orthodoxy, which is really anything but. It's like anything the Bible says, we're against. You know, by the way, you mentioned RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. That was from the early 1990s. It was signed into law by Bill Clinton. Some could easily get the impression that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is on life support or it has somehow been declared unconstitutional. What's the status of that bill or of that act? I mean, it is law, yes. I guess.
It's still law. It's still in full force. The federal government has to protect the religious freedom of its citizens. They're basically, in order to be able to compel someone to violate their religious freedom, the government has to have a very, very compelling reason and essentially have no other means of accomplishing their ends other than compelling that religious freedom. So that's a very, very high standard for the federal government to meet. And it is still law. And it was, and you're exactly right, it was signed into law by Bill Clinton with overwhelmingly bipartisan support.
Yes, now, but it has not been declared unconstitutional. It has not been chipped away a little here, a little there, or anything by any high court decisions, the Supreme Court, let's say.
Well, there was one decision in, I believe it was the either late 90s or the early 2000s, where they held that this it didn't apply to the states. But other than that, the federal government is still bound to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Huh. Okay. I guess I don't really understand the difference between that. But the bottom line is it's still the law of the land. Well, then I bet First Liberty goes back and forth a lot with that Religious Freedom Restoration Act and trumpets that forward. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. So there was a decision in 1990 that kind of chipped away at some of the First Amendment's protections. So that's why it was so important to restore the First Amendment.
Right.
That's why the Religious Freedom Restoration Act got its name, because this is going back and restoring the power of the original words of the First Amendment. And we really do use it quite frequently, and it's been helpful to people of all faiths.
Okay, now, I know we shouldn't read into anything about the fact that the Supreme Court was willing to rehear this case, but I found that to be an encouraging sign because it's like, okay, they're willing to rehear this. I mean, they turned down, you know, 99-point-something% of the cases of appeals that they receive.
That's right. I think a lot of people don't realize that, is that the Supreme Court doesn't take every case. They take very, very few cases. So the fact that they did take this case is, I think, very encouraging and a good sign, because this decision of the decision of the federal appellate court is could have a dangerous effect, not just for people that are opposed to contraception, but for religious freedom more generally. And the next time an administrative agency is considering how broadly to regulate, they must be free to be able to take into account the religious freedom, the religious concerns of the citizens.
At the press conference, the first time it go around, the Liberty Little Sisters of the Poor said, quote, "The government forces us to either violate our conscience or to take millions of dollars that we raise by begging for care of the elderly poor and instead pay fines to the IRS." So in other words, you're taking away our right to do ministry because of this terrible view. You have 20 seconds to conclude.
Well, thank you so much for talking about this important issue. You can look up First Liberty's work at going to firstliberty.org, where you can find our Friend of the Court brief and follow the case. We'll be watching very closely to see what the Supreme Court does.
Stephanie Taub, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.